Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview.
Catholic worldview.
From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio,
you're listening to
Trending with Don and Timory.
Are you an awards show watcher, Timory?
You know, I'm not much of an awards show. I will admit, I usually end up going afterward and looking up all the dresses because I'm curious. And sometimes you want to look up the dresses and who knows if they'll be nice or a little too risque. But there were a lot of nice ones this year and a lot of really revealing ones, especially from the main hosts. Yes.
Okay. All right. I want to talk about that because I'm not an awards show watcher. I was going to say it's been years. It could have been decades. I haven't watched an awards show in a long, long time. But like you, sort of with all television these days, you can get the clips. You get the highlights because they're shared everywhere, the short little YouTube clips. And the dresses, by the way, yes, you can't avoid the dresses because that's usually the big thing. Now, interestingly, I haven't seen a lot about the dresses this year because
there's a reason for that.
There's a reason. Why do you think that is? Because it surprises me, frankly, that there was even any revealing dresses. Maybe it's different because I'm a guy, but I'm thinking if I'm a woman and I know we've got the whole Me Too context and we've got the whole sexual objectification thing, if I'm a woman going to this awards show, I might think, you know what? I might cover up a little bit more. Did they not? I haven't actually seen many of the dresses, although I know that they were black mostly.
Yeah. So basically what happened is, you know, Harvey Weinstein in his primary role with a Golden Globe, it really turned into this opportunity for Hollywood to speak out against the sexual abuse. But what also happened is it turned into not just speaking out about sexual abuse, but sexual inequality, talking a lot about gender ideology. So what happened is almost all of the women wore black dresses as part of an expansion of the Me Too campaign. Instead, it's now Time's Up. We've got to see, quote unquote, equality in pay. We have to see equality in treatment, stop with the sexual abuse that we're seeing of women. But what happened is all of these women were wearing black dresses. There were very, very few exceptions. And what's ironic is that those exceptions were actually some of the most scandalously clad dresses. And it was more so, well, I can wear whatever I want. And it's an expression of me.
Okay.
But at the same time, I felt, at least in some of the dresses I saw, the people who wore more elegant dresses that weren't as revealing were kind of some of the women who were more family oriented and already wore nicer dresses. You still had a big, I think, combination of women. For example, Kate Hudson. I just kept looking and thinking, what are you wearing? I mean, you know, she was one of the first people I saw come up on that stage when I started watching, and I was just really disappointed, especially when they're having this new idea of, you know, pushing back against this sexual perverseness within Hollywood, and here you are objectifying yourself in the midst of the same exact campaign that is saying, no, we are more than objects.
Well, that was going to be my next question. So do you think that they're just not making that connection between me presenting myself as an object, which is what you do in those scantily clad dresses? I mean, the dresses in the past, you're right, have been over the top. And they get, if you want to see scandals, I mean, Google MTV Video Awards. Basically, everybody just shows up naked. It's like they put on clear plastic wrap or nothing at all and just show up. And do they not make, maybe so this one, it seems like it was a little bit better, but still, do they not make the connection between objectifying myself and what I wear and what men are doing when they objectify me? I don't know. To me, that's a pretty clear connection, but maybe they don't see it. I'm not sure.
I think in the name of freedom, women often think, I can wear whatever I want. Even if I'm championing women right now, well, I'm championing that women can be free. And that we, basically, I think women have this attitude of we identify our freedom rather than we identify the respect that we receive. And grant, I can't control how another person's going to or not to perceive me, but I can still have a respect for myself. And unfortunately, I think this is a message the vast majority of Hollywood, unfortunately, they just don't see. They view their worth through what they have given and shown with their own bodies. And so to even try and reclaim that concept of strength and just who they are as women, unfortunately, they don't even know how to do that.
Yeah. Well, and there was a lot of confusion in the sexual revolution that started this whole thing off with people like Helen Gurley Brown, the editor of Cosmo, Sex and the Single Girl. Her whole thing was, yes, men objectify you. That's okay. You objectify them. you just accept that. Like, I am an object and I'm going to objectify you.
Right.
And that, of course, has resulted in much of the mess that we're in today, right? With men saying, oh, okay, if it's okay that I objectify you, that's what we're going to do. And there's been a little bit, I think, a little bit of surprise on behalf of men now saying, oh, I thought that's how we did business. I'm not defending any of the crazy, evil, nasty stuff that people like Wise. I'm not defending any of that. I'm just saying that there was some cross-messaging happening there that seems to continue. On the other hand, I mean, what did you think of the awards show in general? I mean, was the message a little bit better than it has been?
I think we knew in advance that the awards show was going to be very politically driven just by the fact of what the women were wearing and the fact that the Time's Up campaign really right away was saying we need to make changes. But again, it was this focus on changes having to do with a gender, having to do with equal pay and the fact that women in a lot of the roles are paid less than men. But it's just the fact that they're arguing about equal pay within the Hollywood industry, it is so out of touch with the average American and the difference in what they're making. And, you know, Natalie Portman comes up and making a big deal talking because she's presenting the director nominees. And she says, and the all male director nominees, like she makes a point about all of them being men. And it's so unfortunate because while she wasn't bashing with, you know, a ton of verbal words right then and there, it was like they're actually creating this polarizing effect between men and women by continuing to make comments like that.
It's a little bit ironic that a bunch of women who have obviously prioritized their acting careers, directing careers, or whatever, beyond basically everything else in life.
Right.
Right. That is their context. That is their message. That is their perspective. I do think that you're right. There's a disconnect between your average professional Hollywood woman and the woman in average America. I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think your average woman today is saying, is this what I want? Is this going to make me happy? Let's just say I was, you know, getting equal with all of these actresses. Maybe, but I'm not so sure anymore. I think there's sort of a veneer that has fallen off of that. They're saying, I'm not so sure that that's actually going to be all that fulfilling anyway, that this call. Mm-hmm. I mean, time's up for what? That's what I would think. I get that women have been mistreated. I get it. But time's up for what? Like, what positive message are you presenting? Like, what actually is going to make us happy? And I'm not sure, again, I didn't watch the show, but I'm not sure I think heard that.
Well, and I think that we need to make it really clear that Hollywood actresses and actors, but especially the female actresses, do not represent the women of America. I think we have seen firsthand that unfortunately many women in Hollywood have been very victimized, but they've also been willing to compromise. And their compromise has led to the mass influence through media and technology today that has told women that they are made to be objectified because of the compromise these women show every day on screen. And that's what, you know, when you do see nice dresses, you know, you see Reese Witherspoon, Mandy Moore, Gal Gadot, you know, these beautiful dresses, totally modest, respectable, you know, outfits here. And while I can say, wow, this is great, you know, some of these are family women, at the same time, you know, it's difficult because that's not who we are as American women. I don't think that as many women in Hollywood understand the value of family and hard work without sacrifice the way the majority of American women truly do.
Yeah, well, and that's going to sound harsh, I think, to some people, right? I agree with you, but to say that, well, these actresses have told us to compromise, and as an actress, you're going to say, no, I mean, we were forced into this situation, and that does sound a little bit harsh. Like, so you're in the casting room or whatever, and the producer says, well, you're going to have to get naked for this role. And you say, well, I need to put food on the table. Mm-hmm. And on one hand, I think we can all feel with like, well, yes, People need to put food on the table. But if the industry is such that in order to be successful in Hollywood, you need to get naked or whatever. And listen, all of the new shows that come out, I mean, the trend in Hollywood shows is sort of the Netflix, the Amazon Prime shows, the HBO shows. Mm-hmm. The premier characteristic of all these is you drop a lot of F-bombs and you show some boobs. And as an actress, if you know that this is what's going to happen in Hollywood, is that a career path? And I'm not trying to blame women or actresses, right? But it's got to be fairly tough to say, well, no, I'm not. And so the compromise, I just wanted to bring that out because you said compromise. I don't know if people are like, well, did they compromise or is it? Well, in a sense, yeah.
They have.
They have.
Yeah. They have. Well, and, you know, this is coming from someone too, you know, while people say, well, Timur, you know, you're in the world of theology, apologetics, Catholic radio. I grew up my entire life dancing. I grew up around these topics of quote unquote gender ideology and the gay issue long before it was an issue as it is suddenly in the last 6-7 years. You know, I lived this and I had friends that I adored in this, you know, in similar senses of an industry. And I saw people compromise and not compromise. And I saw for myself, I needed to be a stronger individual in order to work in that industry if I chose to. At that age. And I think, unfortunately, many women enter in and they're younger, they're vulnerable, and they don't reason through some of the situations as much as they could. Men and women alike in that industry, because a lot of men have come out and said, I wish I didn't do this role.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Been talking a little to Golden Globes, and not a show that I've probably ever watched, to be honest. But you know what? I did actually go back and spend 9 minutes of my life watching the Oprah Winfrey speech.
Yes.
And you know what? My first impression was, at least she knows how to give a speech, and I actually enjoyed it. I mean, most of what she said, it's hard to disagree. Hard to disagree with things like women, if you're being oppressed, should not be oppressed. I mean, I frankly enjoyed the speech. I like a well-given speech, I'll be honest. I mean, I like it to be spoken well, and she can speak well. I think you got to give her that. Did you watch the speech, and what are your impressions?
I did watch a speech. You know, I think that she can certainly give an inspiring presentation. She certainly championed women in many ways, but unfortunately, you know, it's frustrating because there's so much hypocrisy from so many of these people up there on stage and their connections and involvement and most likely awareness of what happens behind the scenes in Hollywood. So while she's up there championing women for a moment here, and she's talking so much about the suppression in many senses of women, I kind of just feel like, okay, yeah, you gave a great inspiring speech, but you look at the messenger sometimes and it's really hard to receive.
Yeah. Okay. So I get that. Now, here's where I think Christians really need to be careful with this whole thing, because I have been, this is another area where I've seen some of the reaction from Christians online, and I'm like, you're not helping us. You're not helping the evangelization cause here.
Right.
Because when you look at the messenger, all right, fair enough.
Absolutely.
Let's look at the messenger. And when I look at the messenger, here's what I want. I want to see virtue. I want to see consistency, this sort of thing. And on one hand, absolutely, we need to look at the messenger. And then also, let's look at the message. And if the message is good, I think it's okay to say, all right, I believe what you said. Now, do I trust that you're going to carry it out? Do I trust that you live it? Well, not necessarily. But what you said, I agree with. That is okay, too, right? Like, we can distinguish between, all right, here's the proclamation and here's the person who said it. And we agree with what they said, but we don't necessarily buy the whole package, if you will. Right?
And I think that this has great value. So often we have become unteachable because we shut off whether, I mean, especially millennials, they like to only listen to other millennials, right?
Yeah.
And you become unteachable. We have to be willing to listen and learn, critique and approve even bits and pieces of what other people are saying.
Yeah, because here's the thing. When it comes to a lot of conservative Christians these days, the package that they are putting out there, I think of our current president, for example, the exact same claim is said to them. They're like, oh, you're such a hypocrite. Look at who you're supporting. Yes, maybe he says the things you want him to say, or he doesn't say the things you want him to say. And so there's two ways. You know what I'm saying? Like, you look at the president, and you either say, I don't like his character, but I agree with what he said, or I don't like what he said, but I agree with what he did, right? So he did the right mm-hmm. policies, but he didn't say the right things. Yes, don't ignore his Twitter feed, just look at his policy. Or ignore his character, just look at his Twitter feed. Or right. ignore both and just look at any of those things, right? And I get, okay, I can distinguish between those three things, absolutely. And here, right. you know, if he says something I agree with, fine. But I think we need to then apply the same grid, if you will, to people like Oprah Winfrey, where right. we say, I'm not going to discount what you say. And frankly, I don't know. Oprah's not a woman that I know well, but I don't, when I think of Oprah, I don't necessarily think like, you know, oh, you're a big liar or anything like right. that. Like virtue and this sort of thing, it seems to go with her. Policy-wise, I'm sure we probably don't agree on a bunch of policy. But I just think we need to be careful and just automatically either discounting people or discounting the message. Let's show an ability to distinguish.
Well, and I think that this is what's frustrating. I am so sick of hearing this discussion of tyranny and suppression for women. Good grief, move on. Yes, women have faced incredible challenges in our culture. More so, let's say, the ability to vote and many other points in the culture. But today, there is a massive focus on women that has led to the destruction of women as we've sought to make them quote unquote equal. We've essentially made it so that they can't have children. We've essentially made it so that to be a woman working in the workforce, you have to choose work over children. You have to choose not raising your children and having some other entity raising your children. You have to, you know, there's so many things that in fact is creating this great dichotomy for women. And that's what's frustrating. Why are we talking about this tyranny of men, essentially, right? And she's not outright saying it, but that's what she's implying. Why aren't we instead talking about the need both men and women need to support families, the need men and women need in order to grow in who they are, people of virtue?
Couldn't we do both, though? I mean, I'm thinking, couldn't we agree that men like Harvey Weinstein should be stopped and that all the men out there who are, in fact, oppressing, objectifying, all those things, the Hugh Hefners of the world. We can agree that those are not good men and what they're doing should be stopped. Right. And we can also agree that to be fully pro-woman, not only should they not be objectified by men, but we should not force them to physically be like men in order to succeed in the world. Right? Like,
right.
We can actually celebrate your femininity, all the things you just said. I think we can do both, right? And to have a consistent, you know, pro-woman, pro-life ethic. As believers, we need to take all of the positives and emphasize all of them rather than sort of say, well, you have to have one or the other. You know, you have to be either pro this or pro that. Well, let's just be pro woman all the way. And I just feel like if we had stood up and said, hey, good job, Oprah. I'm glad of what you said. Now let's go even farther than that. Let's take it all the way. Let's get totally pro woman. Another story, sorry, it's at the very bottom of our stack, so you may not have seen it, but Sarah Silverman, who is a like pro-feminist, pro-abortion, very vulgar comedian, at least she has been in the past,
right.
Okay? I have spoken about her in the past on the radio, actually, because of some of the just crazy, obnoxious things that she has done.
She's put a lot of tweets out there in the past
She's, you know, she's not a woman who I think, yeah, you know, Sarah and I are going to hang out and agree on a lot of stuff. However, this week, she had a Twitter exchange that I thought was absolutely fantastic. And let me share it with you. So here's what happened. A guy named Jeremy replied to something that Sarah said. I don't even know what Sarah Silverman said. But he replied to her with the C word. Very vulgar.
On social
media? On Twitter.
Media.
Yeah, on Twitter. Okay. So welcome. Here's what she said. She said, I believe in you. Talking to Jeremy now. I read your timeline and I see what you're doing and your rage is thinly veiled pain. But you know that. I know this feeling. P.S. My back hurts too. She used more vulgar language than that. He had a problem with his back, apparently. See what happens when you choose love? I see it in you. So she responded by looking at the guy's timeline, finding some things to connect with him about, and being very positive, saying, you know what, I feel your pain. I understand. You've got a lot of anger. He responded being all friendly. You know what? He's like, yeah, I can choose love. Let me get some help. She actually set him up, I think, with a chiropractor or something. Like, it was just this wonderful thing where instead of responding with vulgarity and meanness, she responded by actually trying to get to know the guy a little bit, as much as you can on Twitter,
right,
with kindness and then with a connection. And I just think, well, in our current climate, we might be tempted to look at Sarah and say, oh, what are you doing? You know, you're so negative on all these other things. You're so wrong on all these other things. I just think, no, let's look at this and say, good job, Sarah Silverman. I don't know what's going on in your life, but that was fantastic. And in fact, I think there are some things going on in Sarah Silverman's life. I saw her interview Father. Oh, shoot. He's in L.A. He does the boys club guy. But anyway, she's going around the country interviewing like religious people and conservative people. And I think that's a good thing, something to be celebrated. And that's all I'm saying. Like, when you relate to people, Sarah Silverman here, who is a person that in general would not be in my sort of circles, right? But she showed us the proper way to react to others when they shout vulgarity at you. Try to get to know them. Try to find some positives and connect. And I thought, you know what? Let's celebrate Sarah for that.
Well, and usually that's something that's more easily done in person,
yeah,
because someone in front of you might say something that you radically disagree with, but hopefully you have 5 minutes where you see them, you know, interact politely with this person, you know, have a little conversation here. Like, you see more of the person and you see them and see the value of them as an individual, not just of their ideology. And unfortunately, with a lot of the conversations only taking place, you know, yeah, through different forms of digital media, it makes it really hard to look at, let's say, that full timeline of a person and find common ground here. And so I think that this is a great example. Even, for example, you know, when I've done debates with a different, you know, very pro-abortion feminists, I've loved almost everyone I've debated, both, you know, in a formal setting and non-formal setting. I've gotten to know them usually, and they usually are good and interesting people. But unfortunately, they do not promote very good things often.
Yeah, that's right. And you can make that connection. In fact, I've got a whole bunch of debates online, a whole different podcast that's full of nothing but debates. And as often as possible, I'd actually try to bring the people in studio for just that very reason. You know, you talked about finding a connection. The thing that Sarah and Jeremy found the connection on is that they were both sexually abused as children. And this came out very quickly when they started talking about the source of their rage and their anger. And I just think, you know what, when people are so angry for no apparent reason, there usually is a reason underneath it. But it's going to take some connection there. It's going to take some digging, maybe even just scrolling through their Twitter feed, right, to see, okay, what's going on here? Because I could lash out at you right now, but if I took the time, and like you said, that if you can get face-to-face with people, that's generally the way to go. But I mean, she did it just on Twitter. I mean, then in the end, he said, I'm sorry, I gave you excrement. And you know what? If you can, this is generally what happens online. In fact, I may have told the story before, but a sports writer made quite a bit of news a couple years ago when he tracked down several of the people who had sent him bad comments online, and he'd call them on the phone and he'd say, listen, I saw, you know, you calling me names, just what's up? Just about every one of them was like, oh, dude, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. It's online. I didn't mean it. And so, yeah, it's true. You get them face to face, you're going to find that there is a connection possible.
From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending.
With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
For all of our listeners, please check out, I want to encourage you, radiant.osv.com and valiant.osv.com. They are huge supporters of Catholic Radio and our show Trending. And they have a magazine for women and one for men that really offers the opportunity to grow in your faith, looking at everything from culture, prayer, clothing, technology. I really want to encourage checking out, again, Radiant and Valiant magazines published by our Sunday Visitor.
It is January. That means it's pro-life month, and we've got a few pro-life updates to give you. First of all, let me remind you, though, to please join Timory and I at one of the Southern California Walk for Life. There's One Life LA. I will actually be there broadcasting the event live for Relevant Radio. Usually we are set up right by the stage. So if you come to One Life LA, just go close to the stage and look for the booth that probably has a big Relevant Radio sign on, awesome. I imagine, and come say hi to me.
That's January 20th.
January 20th, yes. Saturday. And yes. Timory, is that the day you're going to be in San Diego?
I'll be at the San Diego Walk for Life. I will be emceeing. We'll have a great lineup of speakers. The day before, there's March for Life in Washington, D.C. Shout out to anyone who's going to any of these events. You have the San Francisco Walk for Life, which is actually the second largest walk after D.C. Yeah. So maybe if it's not too late and you're closer to the east or the west, you can still get a ticket to join one of these marches or walks. And there are many locally as well. You can go to the March for Life website where they list various local walks. And here's the thing. Don't just let this be your one pro-life event of the year. It's a walk that is meant to be prayerful. Even if other people are not prayerful and they're, you know, on bongo drums or whatever it might be, you know, I think there's a mix of this. We're there recognizing the lives of millions of children, well into the 60s, millions upon millions of children, their mothers and their fathers and their full families that have been impacted by abortion. And for me, it's always a reminder in some ways of the solemnity, the sadness. You know, it's a solemn occasion. We're remembering them and we're standing in solidarity. And it is meant to remind us to really draw us forward into the movement all year long.
And you may be a person who doesn't consider yourself an activist, you know, like Timory. I mean, your family's obviously, you understand the pro-life movement. You've worked in it for a long time. Of course, you're going to be at one of those marches. And I think me growing up, I didn't give it a whole lot of thought, to be honest. Obviously, I was pro-life, but, you know, I'm not the kind of guy probably that would have went to a march back in the day. Now I've been to several years in a row and taken my family. And I would encourage you, even if you don't consider yourself an activist or somebody who would go to a march, please go to one of these events and take your kids, take your whole family. It is a wonderful event. So to me, one of the biggest things is just to see my kids out there. You know, I have a little five-year-old holding the sign. They don't necessarily understand all the dynamics of it.
Right.
But being there with all these people and the spirit of these things is just fantastic. I don't know. It's just such a really cool spiritual event, I find. I mean, everyone that I've been to has just been so positive and such a good thing for my family that I would encourage you, go check that out. Now, Timory, I'm sure people understood it better than I did, but you said, get yourself a ticket to go to one of those things. I think you meant like plane ticket,
oh,
bus ticket.
Oh, buy the plane ticket.
These are not events that you have to pay for. No. You just show up and walk and hang out and listen to some music and some great speakers. And so please go to one of those things. A few stories we want to cover here in the next few minutes. One, you know, I talked about Sarah Silverman before the break, you know, very pro-choice liberal woman. Another person who you might not think would come out with an attitude that you thought was appropriate, Eminem.
Right.
Although I admit, all right, maybe I shouldn't say this on the radio, but I'm kind of a fan of his music.
Oh,
and my
no.
daughter and my daughter and I are quite good at rapping some of his songs. I'm just saying.
Can we hear a little demonstration?
No, you cannot.
On air?
No,
are you sure?
You
Don?
Have to get to much, much higher level to get the inside when we karaoke some Eminem.
I'll accidentally leave the Facebook Live
yeah,
on as
right.
you're like in studio
yeah,
demonstrating.
Exactly. Well, Eminem came out with a new album that frankly hasn't been getting that good of reviews, but one song that I listened to that I actually enjoyed, and again, you got to take it with a grain of salt. You know, there is some cussing and that sort of thing, so if you be aware. But it is a song apologizing to a child that was aborted.
the child and the mother. Yeah, there's regret. You know, we don't know if it is his specific story or a story that was written, but either way, it's a story of a man who ends up cheating. And then consequently, with time, he ends up ditching the woman. She ends up becoming pregnant and he encourages her to have that abortion. And, you know, there's different language in here that where he says, I made you terminate my baby. I can't bring her into this world again. And basically, you know, at one point he says, you know, I should have known to use protection, essentially. I'm using better grammar than is actually used here. But what's so interesting is that here is yet another star, another person in Hollywood, in the music industry, coming out through music that is a very, you know, often emotionally drawing thing, sharing a story about having had an abortion.
And the chorus on this, which, by the way, is who sings the chorus? It's another famous singer who comes.
And the song's titled River. Yeah, it's on the new Revival album as well.
Anyway, the chorus talks about all of my sins need holy water. Feel it washing over me. It's basically a call for forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And I find it a very powerful song. But it's also a reminder, along with what you were saying, Timory, that the people out there, even if they have a pro-abortion stance, and often it's because they've had abortions in the past and they want to justify that, underneath there's so much pain and guilt and need for just healing and forgiveness. And again, as Catholics, rather than have the condemnation attitude, it's not that we're not condemning abortion. Of course we are. Of course we're condemning the killing of children. But to individual women out there that have had abortions, and the fathers that also carry that, a lot of times the fathers are left out of this too. They didn't want that. A lot of times they push the woman too. I'm not trying to let them off the hook either. But so much guilt and pain, and we have the answer. I mean, he even says it, right? We need holy water. We need to feel the water. That's the line in the song.
We need to seek
song.
Forgiveness. Yeah. You know, and I think that's the thing is it's almost like a public apology, you know, a public saying, please forgive me. And that is what, you know, we talk about abortion all of the time. And you mentioned that a lot of people that are pro-abortion have had some sort of experience. And this is so true. But also, I think one thing we don't talk enough about, and this is why we talk about abortion so often on air, and that is that there's about 20% of people who really do fully, let's say, support abortion. And there's another 20% of people who really completely oppose abortion. You have about 60% of people in the middle who maybe say, well, I wouldn't have an abortion, but I'm for a woman's right to choose. Or I just don't talk about the topic and they avoid it. You have 60% of people, 60% of your friends, colleagues, people you interact with on a daily basis, people in your pews, where we have the responsibility to share stories just like Eminem's, to share even the more horrific stories where in detail we hear about women who have died on the operating table, women who have been sexually abused, you know, all of the babies, bodies that are truly being trafficked across this country right now. These are the people who we can influence.
Yeah, you talked about the 60% in the middle. According to a poll in 2014, an incredible 84% of Americans actually are okay and they want restrictions on abortion in the first 3 months, which is another thing we can sort of like build on, right? Like you see that most people out there, they're not for unrestricted abortion.
Right.
To point out, all right, we agree. Like you can find that starting point. Like we agree, right? Mm-hmm. That there should be some restrictions. Yeah. And build on that. The pro-life side, I think, is making great gains. Well, we know we are. We've got some great numbers actually from last year, but we can build on that just by having the right attitude and on building some of those common ground things.
Absolutely. And I think that when we talk about this more often in a calm, loving way, that it makes people reconsider their position, because I think a lot of people do have somewhat of an apathetic position where they say, well, you know, I'm not for abortion. You know, maybe it's allowed in the first trimester. That's a lot of apathy. That's an avoidance of a tough topic. You need to stand for something, or in the end, you will fall for anything. You will end up falling for something. by not advocating against an injustice being done. And, you know, praise God, some of the reports from last year in Planned Parenthood is that 32 Planned Parenthood facilities closed in 2017. This is huge. Abortion Giant has only 597 locations across the United States.
But large number, but going down. That's right.
In 1973, that was much higher. Yeah. 700 facilities. And their peak in the mid-90s was well into the mid-900s. And so we're seeing a almost cutting in half now of the abortion facilities, or should I say Planned Parenthood, because not all of them perform abortions. Often they're promoting and pointing to the main facilities that do. But here's the deal. We can celebrate the fact that Planned Parenthood clinics are closing, but we do have to recognize that they are focusing in on their mission right now. They are performing fewer and fewer services that are not abortion services. They're opening up bigger clinics in specific areas that enter into late-term abortions, so all 9 months of the woman's pregnancy, and they're closing maybe the other clinics within a smaller radius near the large clinics.
Right. Now, the numbers of overall abortions, I believe clinics are down, but actually the number is down as well. Am I correct on
yes,
that?
Yes, we've seen a decrease in the number of abortions that have taken place. You know, just kind of some examples here. You've seen from over the last, I think, probably the last few years, you've seen 320,000 unborn children aborted. That's 7,000 less than we did the year before. So Planned Parenthood just came out with their annual report sharing this.
So that's Planned Parenthood. Each year, the numbers I'm looking at, we have still those 652,000 abortions last year. About one in three women will have an abortion by age 45. Terrible number. But on the other hand, I think one of the reasons we're seeing fewer, especially among the younger age group, is that they've seen the effects not only on their parents, but they understand that they are survivors, that they have brothers and sisters that should be there, but aren't. And so keep praying, keep fighting. I think we are winning the battle slowly but surely.
From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Timmery, you are our resident royal watcher.
I feel like I always get that every time.
You are. And I'm the one who grew up in the Commonwealth. You know, I should be the one. I'll admit, I don't pay much attention to the royal family anymore. But Prince William made a little bit of news recently for urging families to stop having kids. His wife was pregnant, by the way. But,
with their third child, which is...
Three. That's way over the top, isn't it?
Because usually the royal family only has two children, the heir and the spare.
Is that right?
The heir and the spare is what you usually go for.
I've never heard that.
Yes.
The heir and the spare.
The heir and the spare. It is okay. So, you know, any title in Britain, it's one of those kind of common language, the heir and the spare. So they've got it. They're going for a third
one
now.
Is Prince William in line for, is he going to become king?
Prince William, I think that is the expectation.
I don't know.
It's going to jump over his scandalous father, essentially, I think is the idea. The idea is that Queen Elizabeth is not going to let her son become king, and that it will pass to William and Kate.
Okay. All right.
Well, what's interesting, though, is that for years, the royal family has been a major advocate for population control. And so now people, even population control groups, are saying, hey, what are you doing talking about population control? Yet here you are with your third child.
And beyond that, I mean, my first question to folks who advocate for this is, what exactly are you saying? Like, how do you want us to implement this population control or whatever you want to call it? Because inevitably, it involves some sort of government intervention to force people to have less kids, or at least a propaganda campaign to force people to have less kids. And in particular, right now, given our current state of affairs in America, where exactly is he thinking we should have less children? Because here's the thing, Europe, where he lives, is in a population free fall, the demographic decline. They're not having enough kids to even keep the population at it. It's going down.
Does he just not know this?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking. In North America, same thing. We've now reached critical where we're going down now after years of staying, Japan, all these other places, Russia is in a demographic catastrophe. They desperately mm-hmm. need more kids. The only place I can think of that's having more kids than they need and their population is increasing is Africa. Is that what he's saying? Are you saying that, Prince Will? Are you saying we should focus on African children and keep them from being... Because that's what it sounds like
to
me.
Well, guess what? In fact, who does he talk about? He talks about the African community yeah. and how quickly they're reproducing. And talks about how many new children are coming into this world every single day. And you want to know his reason for decreasing the population?
I unfortunately read a little paragraph
The
here.
Environment.
Yeah, no.
The impact on the environment. Naturally renewable resources. Like, I'm just sitting
not even
here.
That, not even, beyond that, Timmy, let me read this. This is what I've read. In my lifetime, we've seen global wildlife populations decline. By over half. So we're going to have to work much harder and think much deeper if we are to ensure that human beings and other species of animal with which we share this planet can continue to coexist. All right, so let's flesh this out a little bit. Here's what I hear him saying. We need to keep the animals producing at a rate where their population is growing. That means we need to have less African children. How else am I supposed to understand this? It's animals over African children. Am I being too blunt?
And isn't the irony of it the fact that it's also in Africa where there's a great amount of space, inhabitable space? You know, I'm just looking at this and, you know, you're putting your foot in your mouth over and over again. Yet for some reason, this is so diplomatic and such a poised stance. And we need to call it. I think people are wooed over the royal family. That sometimes they'll listen to even other famous people and what they have to say. Hey, look, they have three children. Oh, you know, she dresses really respectfully. Did she always? You know, there's this huge question. I think we really romanticize them as a model. And here is someone that many people, I think, look at as models. And, you know, you mentioned it, just looking at Japan. My gosh, there's a whole industry in Japan right now because there are so many old people and so few young people to care for them that there are days upon days where no one knows that these older people are dying alone. And there's an industry now that goes in and cleans up, a massively growing industry, after these older people that have literally decayed alone inside their homes. Or no one's talking about China. You know, we talk about population control. Where are they forcefully controlling the population? Not just saying, hey, here, have a mandated contraception option here, which, you know, many of the countries have implemented in their healthcare, us too here in the United States. But China, if one more person says, oh, well, they have a two-child policy again, that is not enough. And by the way...
What happens to the third child? Well, it's a forced... Yeah, you force abortions. This is what's happening.
Well, and the thing is that it's still a one-child policy. You can only have two children if both you and your spouse come from a family that also only had one child. So if you're only one child yourself, and if you then receive permission from the government, you still have to get government approval. So it's still the one-child policy with a nice name to soften it up after the whole Changgun Chang situation where China was holding hostage a blind attorney activist who spoke up against forced abortion in his small province.
Yeah, I don't know why you would try to defend China. This is, I mean, women in China have to go for forced screenings four times a year. They still have forced abortions. Women without permission and they get pregnant are considered criminals. Listen, it's a disaster. One way, perhaps, to approach this topic with your friends who are fans of China, perhaps, or the whole notion that, yes, we have too many African children. Frame it that way, first of all.
Yes.
Really, honestly, like, because that's what it's coming down. We're not talking about a demographic problem in America. We have plenty of space in America and we're not having enough babies, just like everywhere else in the world, by the way. Yeah. We could put the whole world population in an area about the size of St. Petersburg, Florida, I think. Right. I mean, it's not, you know, obviously that wouldn't be comfortable, but we have space. But frame it this way. What you're talking about is African children, and what you're talking about is colonization of Western European materialistic ideas and forcing them on Africa. That's what you're talking about. I thought we didn't like colonization. I thought we didn't like going to Africa and forcing our Western ideas on them. That's exactly what we are calling for here from Prince William, because there's no other populations, and Africans don't want this. Africans right. don't want to be told, oh, you can only have one child. They consider it a gift to have children, and rightly so.
Right. Well, right. and I've worked directly with some of the people who are working at the United Nations on behalf of life. You know who their primary partners are in a lot of the pro-life work that they're doing? The people from Africa. And what they do when they're there at the United Nations is that they actually intentionally will move votes on things, change where the location is at the United Nations, so that the African population and some of the pro-life Catholic representatives can't make it to those meetings and conversations. It's a very, very manipulative the way it's taking place, because they know that the African people, the Filipino people, the Catholic people do not want massive contraceptives and abortion being forced on populations. The Filipinos, for example, for years said, we don't want your family planning.
Right.
Anyone on Facebook Live sees my quotation marks, air quotation marks. But the Filipinos said, we don't want your family planning money, because it wasn't family planning. They have now forced abortion into the Filipino community.
And here's another point about this that you might want to bring up with your friends. On one hand, there's ideology. I get that. There's the notion that, yeah, this is going to save some animals. But really, what this is about ultimately is money. There's corporations making a ton of money, pharmaceutical corporations that are selling ultrasound machines so that you can have sex selection abortions, this sort of thing. General Electric has made a lot of money in India and Africa selling these machines, and they basically just wash their hands of it. They know that I'm going to sell this village an ultrasound machine, and they're going to have their ultrasound, and they're going to abort female children. That's right. What's going to happen, because that we know that that's exactly what happens. General Electric does it anyway. Makes their money and says, hey, we don't decide what they do with it. So listen, if you are a person who says, yes, we shouldn't colonize, I'm just trying to frame the conversation in a way that make them think a little bit. Like, I thought we didn't like Western colonization. I thought we didn't like corporations going in and making a ton of money off of the poor and the oppressed. But that's exactly what we are calling for when we call for things like more population control or family planning in places right. like the Philippines and Africa.
Well, and look at Denmark. It has become a joke the way that Denmark is now literally, they've had campaigns called Do It for Denmark. And we've talked about this over and over on the show for years now. I just can't believe that we are seeing people saying we're overpopulated when demographers across the board are saying we are overpopulated in comparison with old people to younger people, because we have so many older people that we can't keep up with caring for them right now. And that's why, in part, when you take the mindset that we can destroy human life at the most innocent and pure form, in the womb, that now people are okay with killing older people because, well, they didn't have children to care for them. They had no familial bonds. We were okay with killing our own children. Why not just end the life of those people who are dependent now in their older years as well? This is where we've created a culture of death rather than a culture of life-giving, self-giving love and connection to family and the growth and development of individual people through thick and thin, suffering and joy, whatever it may be.
Couldn't agree more, Timmery. Let us remind you before the end of the show that you can get Timmery at your event to speak about these and other topics. Just go to timmery.com. She's booking for the rest of 2018, as am I. DonJohnsonMinistries.org is the place to go for that. Also, while you are there, please check out the latest trailer for my new film, Unprotected. Will be released probably in July, around the 50th anniversary Ooh. Of Humanae Vitae. Still could use some money if you'd want to donate to help that look as good as it can possibly look. DonJohnsonMinistries.org or unprotectedfilm.com. We'll see you next time.
From the studios of Relevant Radio,
this has been Trending with Don and Timmery.
Trending.
To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DonJohnsonMinistries.org or Timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.